Rachel Kerr's first novel, Victory Park, is set in a housing block where her protagonist, Cara, lives and works, looking after other people's children as well as her own. The story hinges on a relationship Cara forms with a new arrival, Bridget, who's dealing with a dissolving marriage to a disgraced businessman. Now, it's a novel about housing and the poverty trap. Robert Kelly asked Rachel Kerr about Victory Park, both the novel and the housing block from which it gets its name.
So I specifically have a place, but I'm not sure that I want to reveal it because it feels a little bit close to home for the people that actually live in that area.
Is it amorphous as well? Does it take in other places?
No, it's quite a specific
place
on a
lived?
Specific road. Yeah, it is near to a place that I lived. But the actual building is quite different from the one that does in reality sit there.
So tell me about the building in your novel.
So the building in my novel is a two-storey complex of council flats, which are kind of asymmetrical so that they kind of feel a little bit uncomfortable. I did a recce of all of the Wellington council flats, and my favourite ones were the ones which weren't too high because they felt like they had a nice kind of connection with the natural environment, and they felt like places that I would probably want to live in. I think that probably influenced my choice of that kind of configuration, because some of them are like 8 or 10 stories, or maybe I might be making that up, but they look massive, and I preferred the ones that were a bit more low-key.
Why did you choose a council housing block as the heart of your novel?
I think that's an automatic community, and it's also in real life the place where a lot of people live who do the kind of caregiving that my main character does. But I really like the idea of social density, and a council flat just gives you that automatically.
So you've almost got a cast of characters immediately just by virtue of the setting.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Cara. How did she come into your mind?
So I was thinking really about Bridget in my initial plan, like what happens to someone who is an immediate party to someone who's created a big misdemeanor. And then I was kind of interested in the lateral effects of what happens to the people that are related to them and the people that are related to those people as well. I kind of wanted that echo effect.
Right, so what is the ripple of the stone in the pond?
Yeah, exactly. So the novel is really situated at least two degrees out
right.
From Martin. And Cara is that 2 degrees out.
So that's interesting because Martin and Bridget do feature in this novel in a major way, but they are not the heart of it.
No.
But that's where you began, that story of the misdemeanor.
Yes.
So how did you tack back round to the caregiver as the heart of the novel?
I think what's a fairly long-standing literary trope to have a neighbour be the narrator, so that kind of made sense. I really purposely wanted to know the sort of cause and effect out beyond, not so much the main character, because I feel like the main character story of Ponzi schemes, or not... Yeah, just misdemeanors in general.
It is a Ponzi scheme, though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, it is a Ponzi scheme.
So did that come from the news? Did you read about the various Ponzi schemes that were in thought, well, what does that do to those families?
Absolutely. Well, Bernie Madoff had been really big, that had kind of really set it off. And then as I was writing it, there was the David Ross ones as well. It's absolutely massive.
Well, there's a cavalcade of them, eh?
They just keep coming, which is amazing. I don't know. But it does make me wonder, you know, what checks can people do that would avoid it? Because it sounds, when you read the investor's point of view, like they were being really careful.
Did everything they could.
Yeah.
Well, I love the way that the characters in the novel find out about it in a headline. Because that is the way some people must find out.
Even about your own family, I think, sometimes.
There's no real communication of the major scandal internally until it's out in the public eye.
Absolutely. Yeah. It must be a horrible moment if you're an investor when you do see the newspaper and it's like, what?
Or a wife.
Or
an ex-wife.
Yeah, or a child.
Yeah. Because
yeah.
Bridget doesn't really deal with it.
No.
Does she?
No.
she forces other characters to deal with it for her.
Yeah, she's still in denial for a long time, I think. And that's part of the whole privilege thing, I think. Her assumptions are always that it will blow over and it's really just a mistake and it will work out and I'll bounce back. And she kind of does, in her way, bounce back, but she's a different person once she's bounced back.
There are other houses in this novel as well, particularly Bridget's. I love the way you write about living space as a character in this novel. Do you feel that way about the spaces that you've lived in?
I think very much architecture makes a real difference to the kind of way you live your life. Yeah, and that's true of my own life. And actually, at different stages of life as well. Like, my kids have just grown up, my youngest one's about to leave home, and that does make me reconsider that kind of thing. I think a house can represent a chapter in your life, definitely.
Well, and that's an interesting point with Victory Park, because for Victory Park, the council housing estate. For Bridget, she's treating it as very much a chapter, if not a footnote. It's somewhere that she's landed.
A page.
A page, yeah. But for Cara, it is life, and it's an oppressive one. It's one that doesn't really feel to have any kind of avenue out. She can't think beyond week to week, and Bridget's thinking 30 years ahead.
It says a lot about their assumptions, doesn't it? That Bridget just assumes it's very temporary.
And, oh, it would be temporary for anyone.
And it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, well, it's that comedy of misconception. Like, Cara's in there doing everything she can to build a life that she thinks is valuable and also care for everyone else around her, let alone the children that she's being paid to care for as well. And for her, this is a very valid and a very important place. But for Bridget, she treats it like a page.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she makes no connection with anyone there, and she kind of plays Cara off against the other people that live there as well. And the people that she connects with really are the men that are across the road at the panel beaters, who she can go drinking with.
Who are much more of a shared community idea. Like, they've got their own kind of, people have their own ways of living life. And what we see with Bridget and Cara is an incredible privilege gap.
That's right.
Is that what you were trying to explore with those two characters?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that was just there, really.
Yeah.
And the more I wrote them, the more that became obvious. Like, Bridget just assumed, I think it really is in people's assumptions, privilege. You know, that assumption that you will get past something or that you can learn something new, that people will like you. I mean, Bridget assumes that her old friends will forgive her, even though, in fact, they can't stand her. And even when there's direct evidence to the contrary, we still don't really get the sense that she's quite taken that in.
The thing that I noticed about that in the novel is that there are actually a lot of characters, although a lot of them are children.
Yes.
And the adults, apart from Cara, it would be fair to say, are fairly selfish and callous in many ways.
Of us are.
Do you think so?
Well, I think, you know, we do our best. I think kindness is something that's there when you don't really need it, when you only need a little bit of it. People will all be kind to you. If you really need it, then suddenly people are quite busy. You know, because no one really wants to take on someone that's going to kind of sink them themselves. I guess that's the problem.
The children in the novel aren't callous. Like, they can be. But by the main, the children in this book are the most sympathetic and empathetic characters, because they're actually trying to help each other and understand each other much more than the adults are.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something we get trained out of?
I think particularly maybe, I don't know what that is. I'm wary of making grand statements. I've already made quite a few, but
I suppose we wear ourselves down.
I think that's right. I think, you know, it takes a few disappointments and a few disasters and we become wary of taking on more than we can cope with.
What do you think the antidote to that is? Is it Cara's kindness?
Well, it's always a good idea, isn't it, if you can be kind. I think a lot of that is in trying to assume that the best of other people. I mean, that's not a new idea, but just to assume that other people probably have good intentions most of the time, and, you know, that there might be a misunderstanding or you know, that if you're nice, you might get a nice response back. That often helps, but it doesn't always, it has to be said.
What was it like writing your first novel? What was your experience of that?
So I started it for the Masters in Creative Writing at Victoria, and it was a real revelation to me that year, just working with Emily Perkins, who just kept pushing me in useful directions, even sort of practical things like at the start writing a chapter outline, which gave me an idea of the overall shape of where I was going. Suggestions like just to keep writing forwards, even though, you know, I had reservations about what I was doing, just so that I would actually get to the end of a draft, because it's just so useful to have an idea of the overall shape of where you're going. And she pushed me to be more much more expansive than I was natively. I think I'm quite a natively clipped kind of a writer, and really spare and simple. And what I discovered is that the writing that I love, which I think is really simple, when I look back is really not that simple. It's actually, you know, got all kinds of colour, flavour, and all kinds of technical stuff going on which I hadn't registered. And that's the kind of writing I guess I aspire to, things that you read and you feel like it just flows and it makes sense, but there's all kinds of, you know, moral calibration and technical calibration going on underneath.
Speaking of moral calibration, for a novel with so many characters and going in so many different directions, was something like the Creative Writing School seminar process really useful for that? Were you able to kind of say to your classmates, this is what I'm trying to unpack with these characters, where do you think these characters are coming from?
Yeah, absolutely. People helped me in lots of different ways. Some of them were just logistical and practical, like the older daughter was a suggestion of someone's to have it so that I'd have a babysitter. And
purely as a narrative device,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, but she turned out to be a great character. But yeah, that's where she came from. There are a few things that I struggle with, like in writing about children, the tone of the writing itself can sometimes sound childish, and I got pulled up on that a few times and worked really against it. I think everyone that writes about children, you know, has the potential to have that problem a little bit. It's a funny thing, we always think, oh no, another writer, woman writer, writing about children. But, you know, it is the most important thing that we do, looking after children, so we probably will keep them back to it.
That's novelist Rachel Kerr talking with Robert Kelly. Victory Park is published by Makaro Press.